Matthew chapter 17, verses 1 through 13. It is a narrative, and I'd like for us to read this together. Matthew chapter 17, beginning at verse 1. Matthew 17, verse 1. And after 6 days, Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John, his brother, and brings them up into a high mountain apart, and was transfigured before them, and his face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was white as the light. And behold, there appeared unto them Moses and Elijah, talking with him. Then answered Peter, and said unto Jesus, Lord, it's good for us to be here. If thou wilt, let us make here 3 tabernacles, one for thee, and one for Moses, and one for Elijah. And while he yet spake, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them. And behold, a voice out of the cloud which said, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased, hear ye him. And when the disciples heard it, they fell on their face and were sore afraid. And Jesus came and touched them and said, Arise, be not afraid. And when they had lifted up their eyes, they saw no man save Jesus only. And as they came down from the mountain, Jesus charged them, saying, Tell the vision to no man until the Son of Man be risen again from the dead. And his disciples asked him, saying, Why then say the scribes that Elijah must first come? And Jesus answered and said unto them, Elijah truly shall first come and restore all things. But I say unto you that Elijah is come already. And they knew him not, but have done unto him whatsoever they listed. Likewise shall also the Son of Man suffer of them. Then the disciples understood that he spake unto them of John the Baptist. In the previous chapter, the very last verse, verse 21, there's a synopsis given of this particular period of time in the life and ministry of Jesus. Matthew 16, 21. From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and be raised again the third day. And you'll notice that Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. So, as we look at these verses that I've read this morning, you can see that the apostles and the disciples, those that followed Jesus, were beginning to get confused. And what he came to do was beginning to come into focus, and they were beginning to disagree with what they saw and what they heard. Jesus had said before that he was going to die, that he was going to the city of Jerusalem, the capital city that contained the temple where the Jews worshiped. And they understood that he had clearly stated that he would die, but this was such a disappointing message to them that they were discouraged. No doubt they were frightened. And when Jesus said this again, I'm going up to Jerusalem, I'm going to be killed, they, through their spokesman Simon Peter, debated with him. The Bible tells us that Peter took him and rebuked him, and that in this he was answering the Lord, which means they were having a dialogue. Jesus said something, then Peter said something, Jesus said something, and then it was answered. They didn't want to hear what Jesus had to say. And I think in order to clarify what he had said to them and to help them understand who he was and really what he had come to do, he began to take them into his confidence and to show them things perhaps that they had not anticipated. And the scriptures tell us that 6 days after the event that had occurred between him and Simon Peter, that Jesus took them up on a mountain. And I think he took them there to instruct them, because they had developed some very bad habits. It's not an unusual thing for a person who teaches to have those who are his learners, our disciples, to begin to develop these bad habits. One of the habits they developed was to anticipate his words. They were thinking ahead of him. They also began to argue with his plans and to say, no, that can't be. This must not happen. This is not what we understood as we read about the Messiah, as we heard the rabbis teach about the Messiah. This seems to be different. It seems to be drastically different. And then when he affirmed himself that I will go to Jerusalem and I will die there in that city, they began to hold his teaching in unbelief. They rebelled against his teaching. They were not anxious nor comforted by what he taught. And I think when these things occurred, God called them back to their first cause, and that is to hear Jesus. That is the first cause of every disciple of Jesus Christ, and that is to hear Jesus. It is the first call to this congregation. As a New Testament church, we are to hear Jesus. The Bible tells us that he took Peter, James, and John. And if you ask me why he didn't take others, I can answer that question for you. I don't know. But these seem to be men that he had confidence in. And you see them constantly in what we would term an inner circle. I fully believe that Jesus meant for Peter, James, and John to teach others. That is, not only to teach other people, but also specifically to teach the disciples. But as they went there, there was a vision. The Bible tells us that a transfiguration occurred, and the face of Jesus did shine as the sun. That's an extraordinary scene that we hopefully can imagine. They've been seeing Jesus hungry. They've been seeing Jesus tired. They've been seeing Jesus with other people. And perhaps he became more and more human to the apostles and less like God. And so in this metamorphosis that occurred, the Bible tells us that his face shone as the sun, and that his raiment was white as the light. An extraordinary vision that they're having. And the Bible tells us there was an appearance. Perhaps not a resurrection, but an appearance. And it was Moses and Elijah, and they talked with Jesus. That's a rather unique phrase. They talked. It has in it the idea of accumulation of facts in order to discuss an issue and then to confer and discuss together. Well, this is not the conversation they had. It's simply telling us they had a conversation. And the conversation they had is not recorded, but it certainly had to do with the life, the ministry, the plan that God had for Jesus, and also that he had, no doubt, for Peter, James, and John, and others. And Peter again enters into the conversation. I don't think the Lord had invited him to speak, but he didn't need an invitation, much like many Baptist preachers today. Then answered Peter and said unto Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. That's a very verifiable fact, isn't it? No argument there. It's good for us to be here. They were on the mountaintop. You know, many times we talk about having a mountaintop experience. That's a figure of speech, I hope. And by it we mean it's good for us to be here. And oftentimes we get excited about our mountaintop experiences, so-called, and Peter was very much excited about his. And so he proposed a very typical thing for the Jews at that particular time, and that is to make three tabernacles. And of course, in those tabernacles would be a likeness of Jesus and Moses and Elijah. The tabernacles were simply places where they would house these statues to these three beloved men. And these words had no longer than gotten out of Peter's mouth. The sound had not died, I don't suppose, as it rang around the mountain, that God himself spoke. It was not Jesus who spoke. But a cloud came and overshadowed them, and a voice out of the cloud said, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear ye him." And the Bible tells us that this affected the disciples in a rather unique way, in the sense that they heard it, they fell on their faces, and they were sore afraid. I certainly don't find fault with them for that. It was an overwhelming incident, all of it. To see the face of Jesus shine as the sun and his raiment to be as white as the light, to see these patriarchs of the Jewish faith, Moses and Elijah, talking with Jesus, all of this was beyond imagination for these men to see Moses, to see Elijah. It was an extraordinary thing. But when Peter proposed what he did, it offended God. It offended God because they were going beyond what they had been taught. It offended God because their focus had been taken from hearing Jesus to thinking of building statues and monuments and things of this nature. He saw it as an opportunity for them to take their eyes off Jesus, to take their ears off Jesus. And if they did that, they would surely make some very bad mistakes. So God calls them back to his Son. And the Bible tells us that they responded by falling on their face. They didn't simply kneel. They fell until their face touched the stones or the dust of that mountain. And the Bible tells us they were sore afraid, extremely afraid. And Jesus does or did what he does so well, and that he said, "Don't be afraid." This was not done to frighten them. It was done to teach them. Oftentimes we believe the words of Jesus are to frighten us, that the words of Jesus are to confuse us. But I can assure you this is never true. For the entire Word of God is to cause us to trust God and not to be afraid of God, except in a reverential fashion. And when they had lifted up their eyes, they saw no man save Jesus only. And we'll stop there for just a moment. And may I remind you that there are a lot of things happening in the world. And there are a lot of things happening at this particular season of the year. A lot of arguing about whether this is Happy Holidays or whether it's Merry Christmas. Whether school children can sing carols or whether they can't. There's a lot of things that are happening where the secular world is trying to force its way into, quote, the Christian world, and to, I think, take the focus of the world, the Christians, to change it from the very simplicity that is in Christ. Baptist people have never had much to do with Christmas. And I say that just to let you know that we always felt like if we were not careful, it would call our attention away from Jesus. I've always asked the question, if it's his birthday, why do we all give ourselves presents? It's a little strange. I think, be at least perturbed if my family on my birthday gave each other gifts and didn't give me one. So maybe we need to think about that if we're going to celebrate the birthday of Jesus. Maybe he ought to be the one we focus upon and give him all of our gifts. Rather radical thought, I understand that, but it woke you up anyway. No, I don't propose that we have a Christmas tree and a manger and all of that, and that we all bring gifts to Jesus. What I'm asking you to do is to remember there's a lot of hype, there's a lot of things going on that you don't need to get caught up in. We need to keep our eyes on Jesus Christ. We need to hear what Jesus has to say. We need to have our hearts and our lives touched by not only the birth of Jesus, but to be focused also upon the whole life of Jesus and upon his death, and remember that it wasn't his birth that saved us, but it was his death that saved us. So just a reminder to step aside from all the holy hardware and so-called spiritual garbage that we get inundated with, and to think seriously about hearing Jesus. There's a lot of cacophony going on now, and it's hard to hear him, but get your Bible out and read some truths and get focused on him as a person. Now, the Bible tells us that as they came down from the mountain, Jesus charged them, saying, "Tell the vision to no man until the Son of Man be risen from the dead." We usually don't go into this particular part of this incident. We don't usually think this is important to the narrative, but it's all important. It may be the very lesson that Jesus meant to teach. The Bible tells us that he forbade them to tell any one of what they had seen. That seems extraordinary. It seems opposite. They were witnesses. The Bible tells us we ought to be witnesses. The Bible tells us that we ought to share what we have seen of Jesus, that what we know of God we ought to share. We ought to extend our knowledge to other people. And hear Jesus, who has said on another occasion, "Ye shall be witnesses." And now he's telling them, don't tell anyone. He didn't say, don't tell anyone outside the framework, outside our own band of disciples. You can share it with the other fellows. He didn't say that. He said, tell the vision to no man. And he set a parameter. Until the Son of Man be risen again from the dead. You can tell everyone after I have been raised from the dead. But until I have been raised from the dead, do not tell anyone. And his disciples asked him, saying, Why then say the scribes that Elijah must first come? Now they had read the last book of the Old Testament, which is the book of Malachi. And the last verses of the book of Malachi had been explicit, undeniably explicit, concerning the one who would come. And I'll read those to you. Behold, verse 5 of chapter 4 of the book of Malachi, Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to the fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Now, in these prophetic statements, you'll see that Elijah the prophet would come before the great and dreadful day of the Lord. Now, the great and dreadful day of the Lord was not the birth of Jesus and his life and his death on the cross. Evidently, that has reference to an event beyond that. We read in the book of Revelation that Elijah is seen again in a particular prophetic and warning format. But he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children. And by that statement, Malachi means, as he writes, by inspiration, of course, that hearts need to be changed. That someone's going to come, and they are going to attempt to change hearts. And the fathers, responsible heads of the family, are to turn the hearts of the fathers, or rather to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers. There is a mutual giving of heart interest and changing of hearts. And this will be necessary lest the earth be smitten with a curse. Now think about this in the terms of the Jewish people and what's going to happen to them because they rejected Jesus Christ. Now we talk about the birth of Jesus, and I've brought this into this as a way of thinking and perhaps getting you to consider some things, because 70 years after they adored Jesus, 70 years after he made his physical appearance on this birth as a newborn baby, the nation of Israel, the nation of God's chosen people, they feel the wrath of God. And the city of Jerusalem is besieged. The people become so hungry that they eat the children. God is warning these people through Malachi, there will come a messenger who will be in the spirit of Elijah. And you must hear what he says, and the fathers must comprehend his message, and they must turn the hearts of their children to this one who is announcing and instructing. And the children are to hear the message, and they are to converse with the fathers, and they are to change the heart of the father, so that in a family unit there is consistency concerning the message that this one who is called Elijah brings with him. Now, if you were a Jew and you lived at the time of Jesus, and Jesus had said, I am the Messiah, I am the Anointed One, I am the Christ, and others had said that, you would have been puzzled. And you no doubt would have thought of Malachi 3 and 5 and 6 and 7. You would have thought, well, now Elijah hasn't come. And if Elijah hasn't come, then this prophecy or these statements that are being made, it must not be a true and faithful message. What did Jesus say? Let's look closely at this. His disciples asked him, saying, why then say the scribes that Elijah must first come? You see, these people, these three men, wanted to go down from the mountain, and they wanted to say with passion, we have seen Elijah. Elijah has come. He's made an appearance. And since Elijah has come, that means that Jesus is really the Christ. So his disciples were anxious to be able to say this. And yet Jesus forbade it and told them, don't say anything about it. And Jesus said, well, sure, I know the scriptures. In verse 11, I know the scriptures. Elias truly shall first come. That's going to happen. And all things will be restored. But I say unto you that Elijah is come already. This prophecy of Malachi has been fulfilled. And the people who were to hear him and to know him as the forerunner, as the one who would announce the coming of the Son of God, they knew him not. John said the same thing, did he not? He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God. What did Jesus say? Elijah came, and you didn't know him, and you did to him what you thought best, what you desired, what you wanted. And Jesus said, likewise shall also the Son of Man suffer of them. John the Baptist, in order to fulfill the prophecy of Malachi, was in a prophetic office similar to that of Elijah, and he fulfilled it. Then the disciples understood that he spake unto them of John the Baptist. We're not past an appearance of the Son of God. As we look at reminders of the birth of Jesus and the angels that sang and all the other things that are involved in his coming to this earth, we need to remember that he's coming again. And he promised that he would come again. And we are to watch for him. And there are prophecies of what will occur just preceding his coming again. Now, we must not be like the Jewish people were who did not see these prophecies, who assumed too much. And by assuming too much, they missed the message of John the Baptist and his being Elijah-like in his preparing the people for the coming of the Son of God. It was necessary that people be prepared for the entrance of Jesus by birth into this world. I think it's important for us to be alerted, to be familiar with the scriptures concerning those things that will occur before the coming of Jesus in power and glory. I am considering heavily of going over these prophecies again in a series of messages. Not because you've never heard them, not because you may not be aware of them, but in order to call our attention back to Jesus only, that we might hear Him in the context of our age, rather than just studying the Jews who rejected Him and the awful thing that happened to them in the context of the book of Elijah, of Malachi. I don't want to ask this question, but I will. You may be ready for Christmas, but are you ready for Jesus? You may be expecting a lot of good things to happen to you, but are we letting all of these things detract us from His person, from His word? Please think about it.